joined now by Brendan Nunes. Brendan, thank you for joining us. You were at Shoot Around. We read off some of the clips that you had and some of the posts that you had with Keegan Murray and the interesting tidbit about him not accepting any excuses about his defense. But let's start here. Availability. I watched the video. We tried to go tinfoil hat to figure out
frame by frame
whether he's playing or not. He was moving a little gingerly to me. What did you see?
Yeah, it was a different shoot around today. Typically, home ones are a little bit more of a practice. Today, they did more of, you know, we're going to watch film and very light workouts, individual workouts after the fact. So there isn't necessarily like, oh, he was a full participant because it's not a typical practice. But he was getting shots up after, for what it's worth. He said he's feeling all right. He said he looked back at it and it looked worse than he thought. Assuming he means the play.
It was bad.
I don't think it was dirty.
Brendan.
They're like stepping on his foot?
Brendan, he stepped on his foot.
I don't think that was intentional.
Brendan, you see Dylan Brooks. You see his eyes.
It was Dylan Brooks. I didn't even know.
Yes, it was Dylan Brooks. Does that change your mind now?
No. I mean,
Keegan was
behind him. You know, I don't think it was intentional.
Forward to the left.
I don't think it was
like
intentional.
Like it was Dance Dance Revolution.
I didn't look for it, to be honest, to figure out if I thought it was because it didn't even cross my mind.
Sure.
But, you know, Keegan said he's all right. He said it's whatever.
Yeah.
That's what they're going to say, though, so we don't really know. Questionable going into the night, and that's pretty much the extent of what we got. He's out there working out. And for what it's worth, Sasha Vezenkov, still not participating in team practices, but this is the second time in a row we've seen him go out after the group is done with their own workout and go get shots up.
Need him.
Do you feel like the back-to-back has any effect into which game Keegan probably plays?
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it. Probably not. I mean, I think if anything, you play the first and see how the second goes, you know, between the two. But I wouldn't think that that's necessarily factoring into his status tonight. And I would guess that it more so would apply to tomorrow against LA.
And then Sasha, too. Like, we don't really have any view of a timetable or anything.
I mean,
like that.
It we'll definitely get progress of him participating in practices before anything like that. I believe we're about the 4.5 week mark from when he had that ankle sprain, and the timeline initially was 4 to 6 weeks for reevaluation. Doesn't necessarily mean being back, just reevaluated. So, we're still early in that process, but it's definitely a step in the right direction that he's getting shots up by himself after the fact. But, you know, we'll know as we get closer, but there's still definitely steps that need to be taken before we get there.
And we've talked about it before. I think we might have talked about it on Friday as well, but how are we feeling about the probability of him, or possibility of him being reinserted into the rotation when he does come back?
Yeah, I mean, what, we got 19 games,
something
18
like that,
games. Yeah. We're right around there. Maybe you try it and kind of see where he's at. I think you kind of mainly get a feel for it in practice of, is he moving well? And, you know, where are the minutes coming from? Before he got injured, he was really playing maybe 12 minutes a night, and it was kind of just spotty. He seems like a guy that, you know, you want to have in your back pocket of, we're not able to hit shots. I think they did that against Milwaukee, actually, on the road, if I'm remembering that correctly. Or maybe it was somebody else. They couldn't hit a shot to save their life. And it's like, okay, let's try to throw this guy out there. And I think it could be more of that, or that, you know, end of third, start of the fourth, where you're like, we just need to get somebody like 4 minutes of rest right now before this final stretch. And I think that's maybe when you could see him thrown out there. But, you know, I lean more towards, it's probably going to be hard to work him back in this final stretch right as you're going into the postseason, and maybe it's just a wild card you kind of keep in your back pocket.
If Keegan can't go tonight, you thinking Chris Duarte, Keon Ellis, what's the direction you're seeing?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would guess Chris Duarte. You know, it's definitely not going to be Malik Monk. There's a world where I could see it being Trey Lyles, but I wouldn't expect that either. Like, HB could play that three, put Trey at the four, you know, but my guess would be Chris Duarte. That's what they've ran with before. He's played with that starting unit, and, you know, that doesn't mean he's going to play more than 15 minutes, but he would be my guess.
But you could also argue that against a team like Milwaukee, maybe Trey does make more sense, right?
He might. You know, extremely physical. If you remember last time they played in Golden 1 last year, kind of got into it with Brook Lopez.
That's right, I can't forget.
And you like that little bit of fire at times. But, yeah, I mean, the physicality, I think, is going to be a very big thing tonight. And Milwaukee's rolling offensively, so I'm interested to see kind of how they deal with that. I asked Keon Ellis about the three-yard lineups today, and he was saying, I don't know how much I agree with this, but, you know, maybe going small, for example, against a team like Milwaukee can force them to have to match your size. Now, I don't know that Keon Ellis and Davion Mitchell are forcing Milwaukee to necessarily match you, but it's an interesting theory that I'm curious to see how it plays out tonight.
Yeah, and the physicality thing is a word that we kind of throw around, and I would never call a team soft or not physical. But, okay, we're dealing with this conversation against the Rockets. We're dealing with this conversation now against the Bucks. How many teams in the NBA do you think are quote-unquote physical versus teams that are not physical?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I would say, like, Minnesota comes to mind.
As physical?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. Even though Cat doesn't really fit in that, I think that they are a very physical team. I hate to be rude, but you know, come on, Cat is not like what you think of when you think of physicality.
Definitely,
that's all I'm saying. He's finesse.
Just
which
look
is
at
fine,
the DeMarcus Cat picture.
Exactly. So that comes to mind. Even Milwaukee, though, this year, man, like their perimeter defense is not the most physical. It's really Giannis and Brooke that we're talking about, and Bobby Portis, and I guess Pat Bev now as well. So as I keep going,
I'm looking here just at the different teams, and I'm thinking about the teams that the Kings do well against and don't do well against, and the Thunder, not very physical.
Right.
Even though they're long, not very physical. Yep. The Nuggets, not the most physical team in the world, I wouldn't say, right? They're just a solid team. That's not their calling card. And then you get to the Kings have played the T-Wolves pretty tough. Then after that, you get the Clippers. I'd call the Clippers physical.
Yeah.
Right? And then Pelicans, I would call them physical as well. Then you have the Suns, who aren't very physical. So there clearly is a pattern. My issue is, it's not as if there's only three physical teams in the NBA you have to deal with. A lot of these teams are physical. So you got to figure it out.
And the physicality goes up in the postseason. Like, I don't know where Golden State would necessarily fall, current Golden State, on that. But in the postseason, they're going to be physical.
Physical.
You know, and Sacramento upped their physicality as well in the postseason. I think there was a learning moment for some of the dudes that hadn't been there of, okay, we can do this, and they're just not going to call it.
Right.
Actually, they let you play a little bit more, which I think could be beneficial to Sacramento. But I do think you're on to something. Like, that Houston game felt super similar to the Miami one for me, a team that really packs the pain and like you said, plays really physical. And De'Aaron has a season-high 7 turnovers against Miami. Domas has 9, which isn't quite a season-high, but second most this season against Houston. You know, teams that really pack that paint, I think, have made things difficult for the Kings, and that definitely includes a sense of physicality there.
And you have the Bucks tonight. Mm-hmm. You have a Lakers team that's going to have all the incentive in the world. And then speaking of physicality, you got a Tom Thibodeau team on Saturday in the Knicks. So it's not, there's not going to be, I guess I'm just not buying it as an excuse, because we're talking about a Houston Rockets team who you have not been able to beat. They're the 11th seed.
Yeah.
So physical, not physical, I don't care. You have to win these games.
Right.
Every team is going to have something that you don't do well, or that's going to be a struggle for you. And it feels like the Kings right now, if everything doesn't fall right in the exact way they want it to, they struggle.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're just a team that's like fully reliant on their offense, just like they were last year, and that's going to mean that you're inconsistent. There's nights that shots don't go down.
Yep.
You pointed out to me after last game, I think their 7 worst three-point percentage games they've all lost. Their record in showings where they don't get the shots to go down is, there's a drastic difference. I think they're like 34-1. I could have that slightly wrong, but in games they score 120+.
Right.
And it is so much worse, obviously, when they don't reach that mark. So there's definitely a correlation there, and it shouldn't be an excuse. The Houston one's a little weird because those first two games were without De'Aaron.
Sure.
But Domas needed to be better. Like, again, not an excuse, but plays a part, I guess, worth acknowledging. So, yeah, I mean, you have a good point. These next three games, extremely physical teams, and the Lakers are going to be very motivated, like you said.
Yes.
They feel like they want to get their get back after last game. Anthony Davis post game, after he puts up that ridiculous, 25-25, and who knows how many blocks and steals in there, too. Gets interviewed postgame and says, yeah, we got sacked next and we owe him one. We're looking forward to
it. C-Man.
I don't need that.
And Anthony Davis, a motivated Anthony Davis.
Right.
About as scary as it gets.
It's like a blue moon. When it shows up,
it's
you're
true.
Very scared.
I'm sure he saw those 0-9 graphics.
Yes.
I bet he did.
Yeah.
We'll see here. I think we have enough time here. I wanted to go real quick on this ESPN.com story that I saw last night about why NBA teams, and this is something we've been talking about all year long, why do NBA teams keep blowing 20-point leads? It's on ESPN.com from Andrew Lopez, and this is very topical, of course. Even Toronto blew a 20-point lead last night to Denver. It all starts, the article does, with Wemby, of course. Wemby, they asked him after the first five games that he went through, what is really sticking out to you about the NBA game? He said, quote, "This is also something we see in FIBA when we play Team USA and scout Team USA. You're going to be up like 15, and in a blink, you're going to be down, and you don't know what happens because they run the fast break like crazy and get stops." So, yeah, the NBA, it's the same. I believe a 20-point lead is nothing. Here are some numbers that definitely back what Wemby's saying. Since 2003-2004 season, which was LeBron's rookie year, there were only 12 games in which a team overcame a 20-point deficit. Two seasons later, that figure dropped to 5 games. This season, there have been 29 games in which a team has won after trailing by 20 or more points, one shy of a record set just last season. 6 of the last 7 seasons have had at least 20 20-point comebacks. The one year that didn't was the COVID-shortened season, and even still, there were 19 such comebacks. The frequency of 10 to 15-point comebacks has also increased. In 97, teams that fell behind double digits had a 181 win percentage. That climbed to 250 a season ago and is at 233 this season, meaning nearly one in every 4 games in which a team takes a double-digit lead ends up the other team winning. Pace and three-point shooting have been big factors. De'Aaron Fox has some quotes about it, you know, earlier in the season talking about, you know, you really, when you get up, how you stay up, how you can put your foot on the neck, maybe turn a 20-point lead into 30, 30 to 40. That's where it can be difficult to come back in this league. The Kings have seen both ends of this trend just last week, overcoming a 19-point first quarter deficit to LeBron and the Lakers, then watching a Spurs team without Wemby erase a 20-point deficit before the Kings were able to pull out a dramatic win in the last minute. And that game marked the 43rd time this season a team has led by as many as 20 points, then found itself either tied or trailing later that game. It's the second most in the play-by-play era since 96-97, behind 55 games in 16-17. And that number was as little as 11 in 97-98. So I know that's a lot of numbers, but pretty much it's saying not only are the Kings blowing 20-point leads,
right,
everybody's blowing 20-point leads, and it's happening at a rate in which nobody could have foreseen, and it doesn't seem like it's slowing down anytime soon.
I think it's good for the league in that viewership, you're never out of a game on both sides of it. You're hoping that you don't blow the lead if it's your team in the lead, and you're hoping that you can come back if it's your team that's down. So I think it's good for the league. I
actually think it's bad.
You think it's bad?
I think it's bad because, like, no one, I mean, it further pushes the narrative of you don't have to watch this game until 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
Well, that's
that, I see, yeah, that.
You know, like, yeah. I mean, what's the point? Like, what's the point of getting emotionally high because your team looks like they're playing the best game of the season, and then it says 1 in 4 games is pretty much going to end up being you're going to lose that lead. And at the end of the day, exactly, last 5 minutes is really what's going to determine it. So I actually think, in a weird way, and I've got some numbers for the free throws going down as well, I just think that, in a way, I don't think big comebacks are good for the league. I think it's exciting. I think it's cool to have every so often. It's what makes them special. But if it's happening all the time, it seems like that's like a problem with the play, right? It kind of means that literally leads mean nothing.
I do kind of lean more towards Allen on this one. I think that, like, even watching Kings games, they're down 15, 10 minutes left in the fourth. I'm like, this is still a game.
Yeah, it works on both sides, I mean, for sure.
But at the same time, yeah, you have a lead, you know, it could go away. I will say it's sweeter when you've watched the process of the comeback to then feel those last 5 minutes.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I get is not going to be everybody's mindset.
Right, of course.
Because I get what you're saying in this process, but I think it makes it exciting. And from Sacramento's perspective, they've got to have at least like 4 this year, 20-point leads that are blown, at least, right?
That feels low.
Right, and I'm saying, I'm trying to play it safe there, you know, and not overplay it. But I think for them, one of the big things is, like you mentioned, the pace and three-point shooting. The Kings lean into that so heavily. Mm-hmm. They're good with taking a shot 16 seconds into the shot clock if you're even slightly open and a good shooter, you know, if it's the type of shot that they want. And I was kind of asking some of the guys yesterday at shooter at practice and coach and everything of, do you think you should slow it down when you get a lead? And Harrison Barnes's response was, you know, that's a common thought, but I think for us it's just valuing possessions. Mm-hmm. It's instead of turnovers, it's a missed shot. Or a make, obviously, but it gives us an opportunity to go back and set our defense. And Mike Brown said, if that's what got us the lead in the first place, like, we're trying to kill him, really, instead of
keep
just
foot on the gas.
Right. And so it's torn, but I think that there's pros and cons. It helps you come back quick, but I think it helps you, it makes you blow leads very quickly, too.
I think it makes the product worse, though.
I could,
which we can get
it.
Into later.
Yeah, we'll get into that. We'll also talk about the free throws, why they are down. And asking the question to the guys and also to everybody listening, do you think that other teams consider the Kings a difficult offense to face? Do you think they are dangerous right now? Not in theory, right now. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports.
Check us out on YouTube. Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
Joined by Brendan Nunes, our Sacktown Sports Kings insider. Before we get to some of the free throw numbers, Chris has just been on his grind. Can I just say real quick, you know, I'm getting back from, you know, being in AZ, being in Arizona.
Much deserved vacation.
And Chris has just been on top of it, right? Just the rundowns have been outstanding. The detail has just been incredible. Mm-hmm. So just want to give some flowers to Chris, making our jobs a lot easier. Before we get to more of those free throw numbers, guys, I guess it depends on who you ask, but if you polled every team that has played the Sacramento Kings and you asked them, who are the three most dangerous offenses that you face this season, how many teams do you think put the Kings in that top three?
Probably zero.
Yeah, maybe you'll get like one or two. Maybe.
Because when we talk about the pace and, oh, they run and gun and, right, you know, they do this and they got all these dangerous shooters, I just don't think the Kings' offense is that dangerous. Not this season.
I mean, they haven't been this season. What are they, like eighth right now in offensive rating?
Yeah.
But last year, you definitely, I mean, 100%. They're definitely in that top three. I think everybody would have said last year.
Yeah.
I mean, post-All-Star break, they're fifth in offense. And
that's right.
Not
Mike Brown will let you know that, right?
Well. Yes, he will.
Said it five times yesterday.
Even the threes aren't going down very well during that time. But, like, I think that if you pull the top five, they'd get some shouts, for sure.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I can
just think
that
top three is probably, they're not quite there just because, I mean, really, it's the spacing that Keegan and Kevin provide. Mm-hmm. And after that, it's how are De'Aaron, Malik, and Domas going to kill you? And if you could do your best to keep those guys out the paint, which I think what Houston and Miami have done well, and try to force them into turnovers, then the Kings could be in trouble. So, you know, I think other teams probably just have more options. Like, people are going to pick Jokic and all his surrounding pieces easily over Sacramento.
They'll pick Boston.
Right. On the right night, though,
they'll pick the Pacers.
I think the Kings are on the right night. The Kings are deadly.
I was going to say the Lakers might pick the Kings. The Lakers might have them in the top.
They might.
They would know.
Yeah,
they would definitely know.
Real quick before we get to the free throws, just because we have you, Brendan. This whole, because if people have heard Coach Mike Brown talk about the get too deep, you were talking about penetrating and what these other teams have done. How do you think the Kings avoid the don't get too deep tonight and just moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just those two games specifically, the Miami and Houston one, I think are very specific to that issue, mm-hmm, of teams that pack the paint really well. And I think Milwaukee could fit into this as well. It's interesting because it clearly was the game plan going in. It just wasn't executed. And then it's funny, everybody on socials blow upset Mike Brown.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just, you know, one less dribble into the paint and playing off of 2 feet. If you go up in the air, you're putting yourself in a tough situation, or you're just playing off one. You're kind of forcing yourself into making decisions when you could be a little bit more patient. So, I mean, it really comes down to those three that I mentioned of De'Aaron, Malik, and Domas. You know, those are the guys that are really creating everything out there. And the spacing and these other guys cutting and everything is definitely a crucial part of the offense. But those three creating, finding a way to get into the paint and make plays, I think it's just about taking one less dribble, really, and playing off 2 feet, knowing where you're going to rotate. And when that ball gets swung to Keegan or Kevin, and I think Keegan specifically is better at this, like, attack that closeout and then make another pass from there if there's nothing open.
Okay. All right, because you keep hearing about it.
Yes. You do.
And hopefully you can just – you can stop from doing it. All right, Chris, I know we're up against it, but you had some free throw numbers. We can continue it going.
So
as well.
this kind of spawned after in the most recent Bill Simmons podcast with Ryan Russillo. They talked about the free throws and how they had noticed that it just feels like the game is being called a little bit different post All-Star break. Of course, there's been a lot of talk all year long about how the game's been officiated, how, you know, it's just soft. Allen has wonderfully coined the term merchant, free throw merchant. And there was a lot of people who were just out there trying to get to the free throw line and not actually trying to play basketball and have basketball moves. So this is also from Reddit. Shout out Reddit, who really helped on today's show. Before the All-Star game, there were about 45.3 free throws combined amongst all the teams. Since the All-Star game, in a sample of 141 games, that number is all the way down to 40 attempts per game. Last season, both segments, pre- and post-All-Star, were around 46 to 47 attempts per game. This person also looked at three-point attempts because, of course, you can maybe say, hey, maybe the league is just taking more threes, and so it's leading to less shots at the rim, which leads to less fouls. Nope. It's pretty much no change in three-point attempts per game before and after All-Star break. So pretty much the very, very simple analysis is something went on at the All-Star game where Adam Silver has caught a lot of flack all year for how the game has been officiated. People are saying that maybe there was a conversation that said, hey, down the stretch here, swallow the whistle, have it be a lot more like playoff basketball, a lot more physicality. And not only does it play into the free throws, but there has not been a single, not one 50-point performance in over a month, which seems incredibly unlikely to happen just by chance, because we had six 60-point games within a two-month span. Earlier this year, it seemed this season there would be way more 50-point games than last season, 25. But as of now, it looks like it won't even match that number. It's currently at 15 50-point games this year.
That's crazy. That's
insane.
That's tinfoil hat right
there. It's real tinfoil hat, but there's the numbers do not lie there. Like, five free throws per game is very, across the board, is very, very significant. From what I understand, the Lakers still have a crazy free throw discrepancy. Well, they don't count. 29 other teams.
They just attack the paint.
Yeah, dude.
You got to attack the paint.
It's part of the game plan.
That's what it is. It might all come from Joel being injured. Not going to lie.
That is... I've got no retort to that.
We got two merchants tonight. When we return, dog segment and prop talk. Also talk about Malik Monk, how he is the favorite to win Sixth Man of the Year. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
It is time. Ride with us. Hopefully we'll get back on the right track. Brandon Nunes still hanging with
Brandon
us.
Brandon in the kitchen right
now.
Yeah,
Brandon is in the kitchen trying to cook up a W. Trying to keep up with your boys, and we are going to rock with prop talk, and then we have dog segment. Nate is going to get that music going in a second. In the meantime, man. From the 209, Allen Stiles is an Oakland baller if I've ever seen one. Get out there.
You got to get out there.
I legitimately can't sprint.
Hey, man, you know, if you hit it far enough, you know,
you can
walk to first.
I just want to take batting practice. Yeah. All I want to do is take batting practice and be like, all right, now give us a hard 90. And I can't do all that.
Like, how hard do you think the guys out there throw? Like, in that
I mean,
league?
I would assume for it's a bunch of dudes that didn't get drafted. I think they're probably going to be, like, 23, 24 years old.
Oh, okay.
So yeah.
So they still got
maybe younger.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they check for PEDs in this league, Alan.
Okay, I'm not. We're not doing that. Time for prop talk. Since you got so much to say, Nate, why don't you go first in prop talk?
Okay, well, I'll tell you who I'm not picking, and that's going to be Kevin Herter, because I don't think any of us should pick him anymore. I think he should be off the table. What do you think? What do you think, Chris?
I agree, at least for the time being. Let's say until Kevin Herter's points projection gets over 10.5.
Uh-uh. Can I just say something?
He's at 9
He's
right
down
now.
He's 9. At
we
nine.
Already did this.
He's down
well,
nine.
Guys, that's the time to do it.
No, it is.
No. That's what he did, and he threw up a 0 in the blowout win.
I'm the reason he's down to 9.
Yeah. I think
that's the time to do it.
I'm also staying away from Keegan tonight. He's at 13.5 points.
How?
I just don't. The injury, I'm just not not feeling that at all.
If Keegan doesn't play, Kevin Herter, 9 points is free cheese.
And we'll probably go up. I mean, for
no,
sure.
No, dude, you cannot say it's free cheese. That is crazy. You've been saying some wild stuff. That's
I'm just
nuts.
Saying. All right, pick someone.
Okay. I'm going Mr. Suit and Tie, Old Reliable. Oh. I think this is one of his games. And help me out here, guys. I don't know if I should do the over for 10.5 points or the over for 1.5 three-pointers made.
Ooh.
So, I always do the three-pointers.
Yeah, three-pointers is probably the
this is Harrison?
Easier one. Yeah.
I was looking at his 1.5 free throws made.
Oh, man.
1.5.
Will he get to the line one time and
I honestly
make
feel better about the 2 threes than the 2 free throws.
That's probably
well,
fair.
The problem with him, he's getting and ones quite a bit. I mean, that's
true.
A lot
it's
of his
point.
Free throws. So
it's true. That would
point.
Break your
so
heart.
So he could get to the line once
suck.
And then an and one. Oh, yeah.
Right.
All right. I think I'm going to do the 10.5. I'm sorry. I'm going against the 10.5 over for HB. That's just where I'm at right now. Plain and simple.
I like it.
Alan?
All right. You want to go, Al?
Sure.
All right.
Big Al.
Let's
go, Big Al.
Just glaring at Nate. Through.
I don't know why you're mad at me.
He's so mad at you.
I'm going with a guy who balled out last time, and he's going to do it again. The Foxy one, De'Aaron Fox. 28.5.
Bold
over.
Pick.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
I mean, you know.
My picks are getting stolen here, guys.
21.5?
28.
Oh, my goodness. And that's normal? That's not on hard mode or anything?
No. It's not a goblin or a demon.
I will say Dame and De'Aaron have both had over 20 points in, I believe, their last 6 matchups. So both of them like to go at each other. And, Lillard and Fox scored 20 or more points in their past 6 head-to-heads.
The demon for Fox, 34.5.
Whoa.
And you have to take the over. That's
a lot.
That's a toughie.
That's a lot of cheddar.
I'll stick with the normal one.
Yeah.
Chris?
I'm going to go with, I'm seeing here, Domantas Sabonis, 1.5 dunks. That feels easy. It feels like it's almost up on accident. So I'm going to, maybe they're thinking the length of Milwaukee would lead him to not being able to dunk over Giannis and Brooke Lopez, but looking at it here, I mean, Sabonis is definitely averaging more than 1 dunks per game in just about every single performance here. So it feels easy to say Domantas Sabonis over 1.5 dunks tonight.
Yeah.
I like that.
I love that one.
He had 2 against Houston, 4 against San Antonio, 2 against the Lakers, and 4 against Chicago.
Interesting.
There 1.5 feels easy.
That's a lock.
Interesting.
It's almost
well,
too
Brooke,
low.
Brooke and Giannis is interesting, but we'll see.
It's a little
we'll
scary.
See. And Giannis is probable coming into the night as well, by the way, for what it's worth. Now, took the Harrison one. I had 3 here, right? I had Harrison's 1.5 free throws.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, this is an easier number. How do you call it? The goblin or not the goblin? The whatever the 2 are.
Elf.
You know, there you go. Elf.
It's green.
Nice. Elf is fine. 1.5 threes made for De'Aaron. Brooke Lopez is in that drop a lot, and I think De'Aaron's going to get some threes up. We'll see how many go down. But I think he's going to get some
attempts.
Threes up. And two's not bad.
He could do attempts.
Well, attempts was at like seven. I was like, I don't know about this. The other one I got, since you guys took those, or, well, those players, I like Giannis' free throws made. I know typically we're supposed to go Kings here.
Wow, not you too.
I know typically we're supposed to go Kings here, but it's seven is the line. They do a great job getting to the free throw line. The Kings, little foul prone, and struggle with that physicality like we talked about, and wouldn't be surprised if Golden 1 Center's counting to 10.
Seven. The merchant.
I will be.
It's at merchant. Seven?
Seven. He averages 7.2 makes.
Wait, so 6.5 is the line?
It's seven, actually.
The line is?
It's the seven line
flat,
is seven.
So you can draw.
Yeah, oh,
so
I hate that. Mm-hmm. Give All me right. one. Give me.
Chris?
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I don't hate it, but I mean, I definitely think Giannis is going to get to the line a ton. The Kings have no defensive answers for him, so it's going to be interesting. I was also looking, the Sabonis dunk, but I was also looking at my boy Brook Lopez, 1.5 threes. Might have to take that over.
So which one of us four do, or if we go around the room, which one do we like the most?
The dunks.
It's Chris's, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's our lock.
So.
That's the one we like the most?
I think so.
Yeah, I think
let's
so, too.
Let's lock it. Nate, lock that
Lock
thing.
That. That door's locked.
Dude,
we're
lock
good.
Lock it up.
Appreciate that.
All right, Nate, let's run it up. It is time for the dog segment. Roop, roop. It's going to be a tough matchup tonight for the Kings. I feel like we have all been picking the other guys, if you will, hoping that someone has a big night. You know, if I'm not mistaken, you talk about the Lakers having a gear to grind with the Kings tomorrow night. But if I'm not mistaken, Malik Monk missed some very important free throws, among other players. But missed some very important free throws
in
Milwaukee. And I think that Malik Monk is ready to avenge that L.
Yeah.
And I think Malik Monk is going to be a dog tonight. Okay.
He's always a great dog pick.
He is.
I feel like he's kind of the essential dog.
He is.
I mean, yeah, he's the one guy, undeniable dog-like quality.
Sabonis you'll hit every night, but Malik is the pick, if you know what I mean.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Nate.
Oh, man. Okay, I'm staying away from Keegan Murray, just the injury and all. I like what Brendan was saying in the practice about his practice today, all that stuff. But if he's limping, and I'm not into that. I picked HB and in our, I just picked HB. I'm not picking HB again. I'm not doubling down. I'm going to rock with, just give me Trey Lyles. That's my safety valve.
He's got to turn it around.
Yeah, that's plain and simple. That's it.
He's got to turn it around.
That's where I was going.
Brendan, you were going Trey.
I was going Trey, but I could switch it up.
He's got bad blood with the Bucks.
He does. Him and Brooke, you know.
Have they played since then? They have, right?
Yes.
They played in Milwaukee this year, and that's the one where Alan was talking about Malik missed those free throws towards the end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I kind of just want to roll with De'Aaron. You guys were talking about De'Aaron earlier, thinking he's going to cook. I like it, man. Yeah. Him and Malik both for me, but I'll roll with De'Aaron. I think the threes are going to matter tonight, and I know people are a little torn on that. Maybe it turns into more mid-range, but I think that's going to matter tonight, and you know, we'll see who starts on Dame, but at some point, it's going to be De'Aaron, and I hope he locks in there.
Boom. Chris Watkins.
Yeah, I'm trapped because I think I want to take all of your guys' picks. Definitely thought Malik, Trey was kind of my one, and then De'Aaron was going to be my backup. I think I'm going to go with De'Aaron anyway. I just believe that, again, Dame is not a good defender, and those two guys like to go back and forth all the time. Last time, I mean, Dame had the game winner. I just think De'Aaron's really prideful, and I think he really likes that matchup. And, you know, this is a game where they need him to attack. I know Brendan took the three, or Brendan didn't take the threes. He thought about taking the threes. But I just think De'Aaron needs to establish that paint tonight. We've seen him be better at establishing that paint. And, you know, it's going to be tough driving in there with Brook Lopez and Giannis in the paint. But I got to believe that if the Kings are going to win tonight, it's going to be because of De'Aaron Fox.
When we return, we recap all of the running back action in the NFL. We also give our final thoughts and keys to the game tonight against the Milwaukee Bucks. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Thank you to Brendan Nunes for joining us. We will see Brendan tonight. Brendan giving some good insight. I mean, there really wasn't too much to tell from the shoot around. Keegan wasn't, the biggest thing was because it wasn't an aggressive shoot around, it was a little bit different. There was no opportunity to say this person was a full participant. Right. Nobody was really a full participant right. because they kept it pretty chill. So thank you to Brendan for that insight. Be sure to check out Brendan on X and on SacktownSports.com. This is from the 916. Here we go, Chris.
Uh-oh.
Why doesn't the entire home crowd loudly count down from 10?
Oh, yeah.
As soon as Giannis gets the ball from the ref at the free throw line.
Called him the alphabet.
The alphabet gets the ball from the ref at the free throw line. This is from Devin the Dude.
It's a great question. They definitely should, 100%. If you're in Golden 1 Center today, start counting. Absolutely. Hold the refs accountable.
Is Devin saying that Giannis is holding the ball longer than 10 seconds?
Yes, absolutely, and it's true. And here's the other thing, too. Let's not forget, Giannis does a whole free throw. He takes a free throw before even getting the ball. Like, yeah. He does the dribble. He breathes. He does a mock free throw and then receives the ball. Mm-hmm. So the whole process is like a 25-second process, but absolutely, if you are a fan at Golden 1 Center today for the Sacramento Kings, absolutely count down as loud as you can every time Giannis gets the ball at the free throw line because it's the only way that they're going to hold him accountable. And I don't care if you actually do the one Mississippi, two Mississippi. The point gets across. So count as fast as possible.
Have you seen the back-to-back? And nowadays, you never know. But have you seen the back-to-back, which is supposedly, and it's one of those memes where it says, this is cool, and this, why is this okay, but this isn't? Have you seen, it's a side-by-side of Giannis and Anthony Davis, saying that Anthony Davis takes a really long time at the free throw line as well, and nobody talks about it. Now, again, it could be doctored at these days, but yeah, I saw that as well. So thank you to Devin the Dude. We will definitely do our best to make sure that people are on top of this.
Please.
And getting on Giannis, because this is a big one. Both of these games.
I'll bring my stopwatch.
That's right. Both of these games are big tonight and tomorrow night as we and last but not least, with some NFL free agency, going through all the new look running backs and also reading off the amount of money that Kirk Cousins has made. So Saquon Barkley is now on the Eagles. Josh Jacobs is now on the Packers. Austin Eckler is now on the Commanders. Derrick Henry, this was today, is now on the Ravens. Tony Pollard is now on the Titans. DeAndre Swift, Bears. Aaron Jones, Vikings. There you go, Chris.
Right.
Devin Singletary, Giants, Gus Edwards, Chargers, Antonio Gibson, Patriots, Zach Moss, Bengals, Joe Mixon was traded to the Texans. Is this the way that will keep running backs happy now? Hey, my life is just, I'm going to get moved around. Someone's always going to pay me between $4 million and $8 million for what, you know, hopefully 7 years, something like that. Yeah. Has it ended with running back? We can't deal with this anymore. This is ridiculous. Is this how it ends? It's just going to be a carousel really every season.
Yeah, I mean, what you just described is essentially a mercenary, right? Like it sounds like that's exactly what it is. It's just a body for hire. And I do think so. Like, I think that's really interesting, actually, is has the movement replace the solidarity of, like, instead of getting a 6-year, $60 million contract with the team, you're probably just get two $30 million or $20 million deals with two other teams. I guess so, but it's just sad because it makes it feel like the running back position is, and it's been trending this way, especially value-wise, but it just feels like it's the most expendable position on the field, and they're starting to be treated like it. I mean, Saquon Barkley, like, How do the Giants, in 15 years ago, it would be insane for the Giants to even let Saquon approach free agency because he's the best player on that offense. And the thought of running that offense with just Daniel Jones at the helm with no safety blanket, nobody would think that that's the direction the team should go. And so I think the fact that they pretty much let him go with minimal hesitation, like, I think that that shows that this is probably the way of the NFL. Look at DeAndre Swift. What, this is team three in 3 years, pretty mm-hmm. much. So, I think in a way it is definitely going to be just find a situation that works for you right now and then be prepared to find a different one in a couple years.
Yeah, and somebody will find that value in you. Look, they say they say the same thing in corporate America, and also I'd say to a lesser degree in blue collar America as well. But a lot of times, if you want that promotion, if you want that role, you have to leave.
Yep.
Right? Because somebody is just going to value you differently. I don't know if it's human nature, but there is something, you know, where I was, you'd see people come in and you knew that you were doing more than them, mm-hmm. but they would have titles higher than you just because it's somebody coming in new. And that value is just a little bit different. And that you just get valued a little bit less when you're homegrown for some odd reason.
Yeah.
For some odd reason. So it's going to continue to happen. I think pretty soon we'll stop with all this Josh Jacobs and saying, well, the whole loyalty conversation and Saquon. We didn't even talk about Saquon and Tiki Barber going after
it. Really? I didn't see that.
Yeah, so Saquon and Tiki Barber, they got after it. And basically, Tiki is on, I believe,
I'd
New York
he's on the Giants
radio
side of it. Right?
Yes, a New York radio station. And Tiki said, you know, good luck to Saquon, but he's dead to me now. You're dead to me now. He said that on the radio. And then Saquon claps back and says, Tiki, you weren't checking for me anyway. You hated on me the whole time I was on the Giants. So you can miss me with that. Giants fans hopped in. Packers fans hopped in talking about Tiki, how Tiki left the Giants right before Eli won a Super Bowl.
Yep.
Because he didn't believe in him. So pretty crazy for Tiki Barber to come sideways like that. But, yeah, hopefully this stuff doesn't continue. And Josh Jacobs has always been a bit outspoken, and there was a lot going back and forth with the Raiders. I think once the new norm becomes created, which might be getting created right now, it just there won't be as many feelings involved.
Right,
which
is the way it is.
And when we were growing up, I mean, you had Adrian Peterson, you know what I mean, and Marshawn Lynch, and it's not going to be the same as it was. They're not going to be as many running back jerseys bought. Maybe that's what it is.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. I'm just curious from your perspective, which one, it doesn't have to be production-wise, but which one gets you the most excited of all these new destinations?
I want Lamar to figure this thing out. I got to go Derrick
Henry.
I
think that's a great answer, because that would probably lead to the most fun, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you have Lamar and Derrick Henry just dominating in the backfield, and like, I don't think they'll do it because they've been almost pushing against it since they drafted Lamar, but we can just get some optionality, like some option plays with Derrick. I just can't imagine that if you put Derrick Henry and Lamar in the same backfield, teams aren't just going
to
sell out every single time. Like,
you
that's insane.
To. This now puts a timeline, I would say, on the Lamar era, though.
Definitely.
Because now you have Zay Flowers, who is more of an electric guy. Obviously, you have Mark Andrews. So what are you missing now? I guess the deep threat, bigger receiver.
Yeah.
So go get that in the draft. You go get that in the draft, there's really no more excuses for Lamar. I'm sorry. Who would be your pick?
I don't want to say it, but Saquon with the Eagles is going to be – it's just going to be interesting to see how much they utilize him, because it's really going to speak to how much they trust Jalen Hurts. And if – you know, with that offensive line, of course, they've taken some lumps here, but if they have a great offensive line and have Saquon and have all of those receiving targets, that could get really, really scary. It'll be interesting to see Austin Eckler, how much he still has. Like, I think the Commanders is a really weird destination for him. I think we talked about the Chargers and their calf casualties.
Yeah.
I would imagine that's what that is. Like, they could
another outspoken guy, too.
Really outspoken. Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see how he does and just how that team comes together. Those are probably the two that I'm most intrigued with. The Joe Mixon thing kind of came out of nowhere. He's always been like a good, not great
sleep
running
on that.
Back. But
I think he's
got something in his tank for sure.
Well, and we'll see what ends up happening with T. Higgins. But you could really start having some questions about Joe Burrow and the Bengals, because the word on the street has been, hey, Joe's had a lot of talent around him for a long time. So let's see what he does. That is it for Styles.
Real quick, yes. Sorry, I want to just throw this in here while we have the opportunity, while it's still relevant. Mm-hmm. Do you know Derrick Henry's high school numbers? His high school football stats?
No.
They are absurd. So just while it's relevant, I wanted to read this off before we get out of here. Freshman season, 26 touchdowns, 2,500 yards. Sophomore season, 38 touchdowns, 2,700 yards. Junior season, 34 touchdowns, 2,600 yards. Derrick Henry's senior season, 4,200 rush yards, 55 touchdowns for a four-year career of 1,200 yards and 153 touchdowns in four seasons, 8.7 yards per carry his high school career. As a freshman, man was putting up ridiculous numbers. So I always have to get that in when it makes sense.
Well, hopefully he's got some of that left for Lamar and the Ravens. You have Kings, Bucks. That is tonight, but the Drive guys are getting you ready right now. Until tomorrow, thank you to Brendan for hopping on, Brendan Nunez as well. Thank you to our guy, Nate Littlefield, Styles and Watkins. Until tomorrow, secure the bag, like Kirk Cousins, light the beam.